Donor Brass Stocks, good morning.
Peter, morning.
Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
I'm all right.
Good.
I want to get into the ferry.
Well, it's Brins. How are you going, sir?
Man, that name, man, that is off the air.
That's an off the air name. Sorry.
Yes.
Let me withdraw that one from the record.
I want to get to this ferry.
Good. I am happy to have a conversation with you about this ferry. So tell me, is this something that can work? That, but not get into it. Let me get into it time.
Wait a minute. Before I get into that, I got a question to ask.
Sure.
I want to ask this question of Mr. Pisa, Mr. Stricker's statue, who say he lives in Stricker's statue, but he really lives in Waverly Avenue. Mr. Alvin, the mayor for St. George, not St. George, St. John and those people. I want them to tell me, who paid for those granite rocks that formed the Great Wall for Port Ferdinand? Who paid to get it dredged? Who paid for the lift bridge? Who paid for the lovely building that got in there? And ultimately, whose idea was to have it designated a private port of entry? I want them to tell me that. And I hope that the Attorney General will look into that very carefully. Now, the ferry thing, Peter. Hello?
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The ferry thing. I agree with the Prime Minister and against it and whoever supports it. It is a good thing. But you can't make money with one ferry. You've got to have at least three or four. And when we had the Far Maple and the Federal Palm, they used to bring general cargo in the two forward hatches, and the after hatch used to have a lot of mangoes, and they had a lot of accommodation for over 200 passengers. And there was two of them. And they used to run St. Lucia, Barbados, St. Vincent, Grenada, and Trinidad, and no further. Right? So I agree that we should have a ferry, but you can't go on one ferry and make money or serve any great purpose.
But why did the Federal Maple and Federal Palm go to business?
Those ships
if they were ventures that made sense.
Yeah, but those ships became obsolete, Peter.
So then why did they not replace them with new ones?
But that's the argument. And then we had a boat near the Windward that attempted to take the slack what those two boats used to do. And the railroad was doing quite well until it developed some engine troubles and then was taken out of service. The owner of the railroad then attempted to come with a boat. He came with a boat named the Windward Pride to take the slack for the Windward, which was it would have been a passenger ship and some light cargo as well. Mm-hmm. And that didn't work. I don't know if it had anything to do with finances or logistics, but that didn't work either. But I want to tell you, Peter, that from Barbados to Antigua is not 4 days. From Georgetown to Bridgetown is 2.5 days, and you're going against the elements. And if the sea is going up in the southeast, it's really bad, it would take you 3 days. When you're going from Barbados to Antigua, you're going with all the wind and the seas and everything in your transom, meaning all the wind and the seas in your stern to push you down.
So how much time are you taking?
So if you leave Barbados this evening at 4 o'clock, by 4 o'clock tomorrow evening, or midnight tomorrow night, you could be in Antigua. Because
So you're saying it's 12 hours and not 3 days. Remember that you have to transit several places in between, huh? Because you had to pass through.
You're talking about direct sailing.
We're talking about direct sailing because the direct sailing isn't viable. So you're saying you're sailing past several countries that we identified.
But if you're going to stop places, it could take 5 days, it could take 6 days.
Right, and that's the point. That's the point. Because if I sail in from Barbados at midday, and I'm getting in to the next port at midnight, I can't leave at midnight because people won't leave in the morning. So you will invariably have to then leave in the morning. And the point is that if you are taking a sailing that takes more than 5 hours, essentially that takes up a whole day. Because you can't do two destinations in one day.
That ain't exactly true. That ain't true.
No, you tell me as a person who knows boating, how does that work? Right? Listen, I can say to you, right? I have to do a presentation in St. Vincent tomorrow. Can I take a boat to go down to St. Vincent, do my presentation, and come back up in the evening and sleep in my own bed?
You can get a boat leaving Barbados tomorrow.
And when would I get to St. Vincent?
Is it overnight rent, Peter?
Yeah, but the point is that I don't want to overnight rent. I want to go do my business and come back home and sleep in my bed the same night.
Yeah, but you will have to look for the yacht then.
Right. You see, and this is the question that I keep asking, and I'm saying to you as a person who understands the marine environment, I don't have a problem with boats, but when someone comes and tells me, we're wasting time with Liat, let's have a ferry service, What are the practicalities of it? If you are going to have 4 or 5 ferries running up and down the Caribbean to service the 40 islands, right?
Peter, listen,
what's
to
the
me.
Cost?
Listen. I am not saying that if you get a ferry service in the Caribbean that you should done away with LEAP. I am not for that at all, because LEAP would have to play its part in regional integration. But I'm saying that I've got people like me, for example. If I had to go from Barbados to England and I had a choice of going on a plane and a boat, I would go on a boat every day. Because
but you ain't got nothing to do? You don't work anywhere?
Well, Peter.
No, I'm being frank. You don't work anywhere, so it's easy for you.
I say that to tell you. I say that to tell you that I've got people would prefer, whether they got time or not, people would prefer a boat.
And I don't have a problem with that.
It's all about safety.
I don't have a problem with that. But the question is critical mass. Because in order to make the boat profitable, you have to have a certain number of people using it. Which means that you will set your fare and you will have a certain number of people paying your fare. Now, my question to you is, what is the likelihood that you are going to get in order to make a ferry between Barbados and Grenada viable? What kind of numbers do you need to sustain it? I'm talking about passengers, not cargo.
Let me make the point. If you're traveling by a plane, you can only take one suitcase weighing 70 pounds.
Anything
other than that, you've got to pay extra.
Right.
On a boat, you could care.
No problem. So answer my question now. If you say, let's use Grenada, right?
Right.
Close by and so on. What are the numbers that we would need to make a ferry that is costing you in excess of $1 million to buy between Barbados and Grenada viable? What kind of numbers are we looking at in terms of people?
Daily? It's not only about people. It is about character too. Because if you're going to run a ferry, you can't run a ferry just so with people because you ain't going to make no money. It is also about character.
So there is, in your opinion, a sufficiently large market for moving cargo between Barbados and Grenada to make it viable?
Peter, let me tell you something.
What exactly that Grenada's need from Barbados? I can tell you there's a business between Barbados and St. Vincent for moving cargo. The problem is that the Coast Guard will probably lock them up for doing it.
But that's a
business that can make money because there's a lot of cargo coming from St. Vincent to Barbados. You know that.
Peter, listen to me.
You know that, right?
They got what?
A lot of cargo coming from St. Vincent to Barbados.
Yes.
But yeah, is the kind of cargo that unfortunately you can't carry legally?
Man, I ain't getting this out there, Peter. Why are you off?
But no, because my thing is that if you can say that there's all of this product coming from St. Vincent to Barbados or Grenada to Barbados, then you're going to be able to say what it is. And I am not convinced that there is this quantity of product that can make a ferry viable. But talk to me and tell me.
Let me tell you something. They got those big car carriers. Those big car carriers that you see in the port, they look like a big box on the water.
Right. I called you about one of them a day.
Pardon?
I called you asking you about one a day.
Right.
Right.
Those ships can't go in certain islands,
mm-hmm.
like St. Vincent, unless they extend the port down there and in Grenada. Because I went to Grenada in recent times, and Grenada got a really new port, a lovely port. I must say,
right here in town.
But what I want to tell you, though, Peter, is that they got a boat named Admiral Bay that is ferry those cars from Barbados to Grenada, and is made 2 and 3 trips with cars to Grenada.
So I am looking at a weekly service, a daily service. What kind of service frequency am I looking at?
Well, Peter, there will be teething problems, and you can't make money in the first year, the first 6 months to a year. But eventually, people will warm to the idea, and you will find that people will be moving between the islands more frequently because the fares obviously will be cheaper. They can travel with more luggage, and everything would be beneficial to the travelers.
I want to engage the issue some more, but unfortunately, I think it's time to go to the regional roundup, and we're going to have to go to the regional roundup. When we come back, we may want to move on to a couple other things. So this is the end of the first half, one could say, and we're going to go to the regional roundup. We come back to you in about 10 minutes and continue with more of Down to Brass Tacks. Down to Brass Tacks, good afternoon and welcome.
Good afternoon, Mr. Wickham.
Yes, sir. How are you doing? This is
you're hearing me.
Mark Smart.
Listen, I called you Mr. Wickham.
But Mark, we are not on the level where you need to be calling me Mr. Anything.
But hold on. If I
should call you Uncle Mark.
As a matter of fact, I would more appreciate that.
Right. Okay, Uncle Mark. I'm sorry.
How are you doing, right?
Uncle Mark. No, I'm good. I thought we had an understanding.
No. You see, you could meet me down the street and call me Mark Smart.
Mm-hmm.
But some people take a liberty when you call me Mark Smart. I want to call me Mark Smart. I don't mind that because as far as I'm concerned, I've admitted that. But no, let's debate that because you and I go back a long way, right?
It does, precisely. And I say it with affection. I think of you as what, Uncle
what
Mark.
I
was at primary school with your son, and you know, he called you daddy, I call you Uncle Mark. So
Uncle Mark. Mr. Wickham, yes, I want to come in on this idea of the ferry.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to support you in total. For me to do this, I have to give you a background of my information and my knowledge, because I believe around the time that I'm talking about, I was around the age of 23 years. I've also collected a whole series of documents which I will now expose to as I discuss with you. The federal maple and the federal palm was a gift from the Canadian government for the formation of the federal government, which meant that as far as moving cargo through the region, that the federal government and the federal maple were there for that. At some times, they were involved in a passenger trade. The reason for this, I know that because the schooners that came into the Carinage at the time were bringing in fruits and bringing in various things, and the transshipment between the islands where the federal maple and the federal palm could have moved these things that were transshipped to Barbados through the Bridgetown port and moved them to other sections within the Caribbean. I know around that time there was what was known as a hydrofoil boat called the Potomac, which was strictly a passenger boat. And this passenger boat used to move people in an excursion form from Barbados to St. Lucia to Antigua, wherever it is, in a matter of, the longest was 6 hours. Longest was 6 hours. This is far, and they would go out the Friday evening and probably get back in. If it was a bank holiday, they would probably get back in, have a run some of the islands back in by the Monday night in order for people to go to work to choose the Potomac was the name of it. It was once a Coast Guard boat, which in my reading was owned by one of the former president of the United States, Roosevelt, which was actually transformed to become this passenger boat. Now, in 1961. That boat sank in the Carinage.
Which is what? The
Potomac.
The Potomac, okay.
The Potomac, right?
So it's still at the bottom of the Carinage now?
No. It was salvaged in 1962.
Okay.
It left here and at least stood there for a while, and then it went off to be repaired. It is now owned by a man called Bill Short, who lives in Canada. I've got all the information.
And it's where now?
It is being recommissioned in Canada. I think mm-hmm. it's finished. In Maryland, is finished, and he's trying to see if he could. He was in Barbados about last year, and was trying to see if he could find some of the old seamen that sail on the Potomac, and also to see if he could set up what can be considered as an inter-island passenger boat. Listen to what I'm saying. Now, we talk about a ferry. A ferry, obvious, Mr. Wickham, you and I would know that. It is meaningful in terms of transporting cargo, whether it be containers, whatever it may be. In your position, you want to get to your destination, do what you have to do, and get back.
Right.
So that is why the hydrofoil boat, which was named the Potomac, was introduced. Eventually, I can go further to say that the same boat, the Potomac, was owned by a Barbadian after by the name of Mr. Taylor, who lived in Dells Road. He eventually, T.T. Taylor was his name, he eventually turned it into this passenger boat trading the islands. What I don't understand is the mix-up that people are saying as far as you need a ferry. You need a ferry, providing that the ferry, in truth and fact, can carry the amount of transshipment through the islands. But that would be costly, and you know that would be costly to transship from the major countries and to come to Barbados. Then, obviously, when these ships are making the same downgrade within the trade, they're stopping into Antigua, they're stopping into Grenada, they're stopping into those ports. So the transshipment trade between Barbados and a ferry will not. So the idea, Mr. Wickham, of a ferry for the movement of passengers, I do not think will work. I think what Barbados needs is similar to what I have just met, and there are boats that can do this. because the jet planes that people own that take at least about 45 minutes to half an hour to get to Antigua from here in Barbados. And there are people who have got hydrofoil boats, who are jet propulsion, they don't carry a prop, but they skim the top of the water, they run at the top of the water, they float across and take less time to get from point A to point B. So I'm saying
that. I'm familiar with the technology. But Mark, my question is that if you are saying that you can move towards this hydrofoil technology, are you convinced that the boat can be purchased, that it can be deployed, and that it can run efficiently and carry sufficient passengers between all of the different Caribbean destinations to make it a feasible alternative to LEAC?
Let me give you the answer to that. It's a yes. The boat I'm speaking about, 165 feet in length, and transformed to carry at least 200 people at any one time. Mr. Stewart was down here with an idea of seeing if he can get the movement of this Potomac back to the region. He spoke to one or two people, including myself, because I have the document here, including myself, the idea that Barbados needs to have this type of movement in the region, Trinidad, Antigua, and those places. Within a weekend, fortnight, you get it done. And within the time that you have talked about, because you don't want to spend 14 or 15 hours on a ferry.
Mark, I don't want to spend 6 hours neither.
6 hours, right?
So I don't want to spend 6 hours either.
Right. Thank you. Let me come back and say, yes, the Federal Maple and the Federal Palm served the purpose at the time, because they were there when Barbados had just opened the Bridgetown port. And in order to move transshipment that came from the England and those places from the Bridgetown port, the Federal Maple served the purpose. But they could not have served the purpose in the sense of bringing fruits and bringing certain things from down the islands. These things still continue within the inner coinage. It's only after these people move from the schooner trade into what we consider to be the motor vessel trade that they were able to dock within the Bridgetown port, that we saw some of the fruits being landed in the Bridgetown port. So I need to get this straight. That it isn't that you know, it is that you have the documents there to tell you exactly. But since they're talking about this, sure, and I'm sharing this with you, Peter, in the sense that yes, there is a need for the inter-island movement, not a ferry. There's a need for the inter-island movement with the possibility of somebody investing into it. Hydrofoil boat, a ferry. And it would mean that yourself and me could say, well, look, let's go to St. Vincent for 2 hours and come back up when the boat turns around.
Yeah. Right.
Beside that,
it's not only that you go to St. Vincent for 2 hours and turn around and come back, but you are also able to do that twice a day. You're able to also service Grenada, St. Lucia, Dominica, Antigua. You see the challenge?
Because
one boat can probably connect Barbados to Grenada. But if you're looking at having a daily service to all of the different islands, it becomes a challenge.
After those boats, you had the Windward, you had one or two other boats that could not have met the commitment because of expense. Mm-hmm. The Windward and those boats were into the same passenger movement between the islands. But because of time and because of the idea of petrol and because of delay and because of what we consider to be not the terrain of the sea, it was difficult for people to contend, for the owners, Williams, to continue that windward vessel. But as I mentioned, and I believe that the government of Barbados could start looking at it within the region as far as movement of people through the Caribbean, not replacing, but finding a placement for those persons who don't want to travel by air, who really want to have the same time, but want to travel by sea and don't want to be seasick. You're not going to be seasick on a hydrofoil boat. You're not going to be seasick on a hydrofoil boat. And I think you said you know what I'm talking about, because these boats actually surf the top of the water and go as fast as they can according to the speed that they're built for. But I'm saying that I'm in contact with Bill Stewart, the gentleman who just bought back over the Potomac. Mm-hmm. He's just recommissioned it. As a matter of fact, he was here with the idea of trying to find out if he can recruit some more Barbadian seamen to sail on the Potomac. I'm saying that since this is the case, that discussions with this gentleman in the interest of moving people at a faster rate and probably at a cheaper rate than the ferry is possible. So I think I did throw some light on what
you did
this morning.
You did. And I'll tell you, Mark, when this question comes up, a lot of times people think that I am opposed or negative on the idea of this interregional travel using boats. I agree with you that we have to bring down the cost of interregional travel. It's just too expensive. And I would also agree with you that the challenge is that the aircraft type that we use and the fact that we use aircraft, period, makes it impractical. I fly from London to France for £50 or €50 sometimes. And I ask myself, why is it? Same flight, actually the flight is even longer than Barbados to Trinidad. But why to fly to Trinidad, I have to be paying $300 US.
Wow.
And that's something that we have to be able to deal with. Now, was it called RedJet? Tried the low-cost carrier approach. And the low-cost carrier approach operates on the assumption that you have critical mass created by a larger plane and you can fly it full or halfway full and you will make the same money to be able to support it. When you have a smaller plane, your revenue base is smaller and as a result, the fares have to be higher. Now, I understand that that's how it works, but the RedJet project failed and it failed largely because you didn't have that critical mass of people moving frequently. So you have it on weekends, but the challenge is that you have to be able to support that throughout the week. And you have to be able to pay your lease payments on your planes and whatnot. And you're not going to have 300 people picking up themselves twice a day to go to Grenada. It's just not going to happen. And it's not because the fares are expensive. It's because people have things to do. So my friend just know that I was talking to, when he said he wouldn't mind going on a boat, and I was teasing him saying he ain't got nothing to do. The fact is that people who are retired have that luxury, would not mind taking a boat trip and going down Beckway or St. Vincent or wherever. But
let me tell you, Mr. Wickham, you asked a question, and I think I found the answer for you. Why the Federal Maple and the Federal Palm was taken out? And since we were talking earlier, or others were talking earlier, about the passenger service of the Federal Maple and the Federal Palm, the Federal Maple and the Federal Palm were taken out because we saw the transformation of shipping by container.
Okay.
And a lot, and because they were not commissioned to ship. They might have carried a container and a container there in the early days. But if you look now, the whole world is shipping by container. So the Federal Maple and the Federal Palm would be outdated in a region like this, which depends almost every day on containers arriving at the Bridgetown port. What I think we should lobby about. What I think we should lobby about that. The boat I'm speaking about, the hydrofoil boat, can bring business for at least entrepreneurs. For example, we've got a business now in Barbados where I think it's a tour bus that go along on next with music and everything and on it, and it's doing a fantastic trade.
It's all that, yeah. It's got alcohol too.
Alcohol too. Yeah. I think they got a pool.
Like in that too. Model, that business model. It got a pool in it.
Pool in it too.
Oh. Women with bikinis too.
Well, depends. I'm not going on. But I understand there's a pole. You can do pole dancing if you want. But then.
Oh, there's a pole. I thought you told me there's a pool.
No.
Was that going a pole? Yeah. That kind of model could work. Yeah.
Well, I'm saying that with the amount of young people on the island who want to experience things, mm-hmm. that a young entrepreneur, some person who wants to invest money, could invest in a hydrofoil boat, shares or whatever, maybe, so that they could now introduce what can be considered to be regional excursions.
But Mark,
Mark,
there's a lot of money. You're talking about a few million dollars. Who's got that kind of money put down?
Over a couple of years, Mr. Wickham, over a couple of years, if you realize that 365 days in a year, let's break it down to 300 days, and you decide that you're going to do an excursion trade of 200 people a weekend. You're moving towards almost 1,000 people by the end of the month at a particular figure, so it will pay back for itself. Thanks for entertaining.
Mark, thanks for giving me all of this information on the idea of regional travel via boat. There's something that fascinates me, but it requires some thought. All right, this is the point at which we break for the latest. We go to the latest, we come back to you in about 10 minutes, and then we continue until 1:30. Do stay with us. Down to Brass Tacks, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Peter.
Yes, sir, how are you?
I all right.
You good?
Yes, I good. Once I hear you, I feel better.
I'm happy to hear that, sir.
Yes, because I could get a little time to discuss these things with you, some of you pet peeves. But something I just heard over the news, somebody was saying that the females are being targeted in this whole layoff exercise.
Yeah, I'm hearing that too.
You know, I really wonder what really is going on, who's blowing up this thing so very early. It is a matter of a fact that about 60 or more than 70% of the people that were employed in Barbados during the last about 30 or 40 years has been females. And then, and in any...
We stand to reason.
But it stands to reason that, that some of them will have to go home.
Well, certainly if there are more women working, and then they would have to be, and if there are more women working in temporary positions, it stands to reason that more of the people who go home would be women.
Simple as that. So I don't know what these people are getting at. You know, and it worries me when I hear these type of things, right? And I was reading something. This lady, you know, Michelle M. Russell, she was in the Sunday paper on the October 7th, just alongside your program.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know if you're familiar with
it. I'm familiar with it.
Well, I mean, what worries me about, you know, these feminists, because they have to call these people feminists. If you remember her article, this is what she said, and I quote it. Recently, I visited a bar with a friend and her friend. We listened as one guy proudly bragged about his impressive member. To my surprise, a young lady at the bar grabbed the guy's member to test the truth of his statement. As I was fighting the urge to faint, and she got in the conversation, I was mortified, and bracing myself for what I thought would be his angry retaliation, and thinking how best to aid her escape from the bar, I noticed he didn't seem bothered in the slightest. In fact, he seemed rather pleased at the engagement. And I had to laugh at this. I had to laugh
at funny.
What we are going about. Now, in one breath, she is saying that how, you know, she was mortified and she feels she's going to faint. But then when the person grabbed the gentleman's member, she was willing to aid her in her escape. You got my point?
But you realize the challenge with that issue, though. I mean, it's a funny scenario, huh?
Uh-huh.
But the power relations between men and women are different.
Yeah.
So basically, if a woman pull at you, it's not the same like if you pull at a woman.
Mr. McCann, we ain't going to leave this here to choose. It. Just get an important call.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll finish it.
All right. Sorry that we can't engage. This issue of public service layoffs can't become a gender issue. If you were to say, let me lay off, let's say, 200 lawyers of the more recent vintage, you would take the same position. If you were to say, let me lay off 200 doctors of the more recent vintage, you would take the same position. The reality is that there are more women going into the workforce in more responsible positions. And when we talk about a class of persons, like we call the sonographer clerk, invariably it is women. So the idea of saying, let's take a gender position that suggests that women are being unfairly targeted, I think is an unfortunate construction of events and realities that attempts to suggest that we're doing something that we're really not. I have an email here from a lady, and she says, Peter, the rain came down and I didn't hear the name of your preferred vendor in the market. I thought at one stage I had one of those. Like the caller to Brass Tacks earlier, I found out this was not so after a purchase a few months ago. Because of the scenario that Sunday morning, I decided to weigh the fish when I got home. I'd pay for 10 pounds of dolphin at $10 per pound before the skin was removed in my presence, I may add. I brought home 7.62 pounds of fish. It was not a whole dolphin. It was a piece weighed on a scale, and the weight was given to me. I have not been back since to purchase fish from the supermarket nowadays. They may think twice about robbing you, Peter, for obvious reasons. Others are not as fortunate. Well, ma'am, I haven't given the lady the name of my fish lady, but I think the people have kind of worked out who she is. And I can tell you that I'm in a situation of absolute trust because what I will normally do is I buy what you would call worth. So if you give $100, you say you want $100 worth of fish. I understand and I have understood for some time that when you buy fish, you essentially buy fish with bones and skin and everything. If you want it clean, you pay a fish for that fee for that purpose. And you are entitled to have the skin and the bones given back to you if you want. And you can compare the weight and make sure that you've gotten your money's worth. Many people don't do that. Many people don't take the skin and the bones. Some people will use the skin for dog food or alternatively to make soup or something like that. I'm not one of those persons. I have no interest in those parts. And I have no interest in weighing it because, as I said, I do have a situation of trust. At the same time, however, if you are a person who is having experiences like these from different people, I would encourage you, when you say that you want $10 in fish at $10 a pound, which would be a pound of fish, and you want it clean, you pay the fee for the cleaning, because that's a different cost, and then you would also be entitled to have back your bones and your skin, and then you can do the weight comparison. And that way, you don't find yourself getting into a situation like these other people have gotten in. Or if you are like me, and you do trust the person, and you have every good reason so to do, then you would just say, look, give me the fish and the bones and so on, you can deal with separately. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Lincoln?
Yes, sir.
I want to ask you something. If you, I call nobody name. Mm-hmm. If you had some money put down,
mm-hmm.
you know how much money it is. When you going back for your money, some of it gone. What you would call that, stealing?
Stealing? Not really. If you put down money on a bank and you gone back, some will be gone because they can use it to pay fees.
Fees?
Yeah.
Well, I ain't gonna pay the fees. Fees? What? Then give me my money. I lend it out. I get an interest offering. Well, like, and I tell you something.
Well,
they don't call me and say, well, listen, I got to take off, so I take off.
They just take it off.
They don't tell anybody nothing.
Just take it off.
Yeah, then just take it off. That's wrong.
But you got an option. You're talking about a bank, right?
Yes, I know.
Right.
I got your option.
No, but you have an option.
Take all my money, put it down there.
Pay credit union.
Yes.
But right, but I don't understand. But what's so hard about that? Putting money in credit union? You have a mortgage?
Okay. But there's one thing that I would like to say.
You have a mortgage to pay?
No.
Right, but then that's easy. If you don't have a mortgage to service at the bank, take it off and put it on the credit union.
Okay, thank you. There's one I would like to say. They're not building a big building up here in Warren. A big building, big government building. It ain't going to a bank at all. You can get money changed there. But you can't put down a big lot of tall thing in here. Let's build a bar, build a bike there.